Well, the planning process is over.
That's the big dog as opposed to the little one.
Well, that's the one that's famous for being on the show, though. Is the big
no
dog,
the right? Little one?
Oh, the littler one is the one who's had many appearances.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
And the littler one's dog. What's the name
of
the
Skier. Littler one?
Skier.
Skier.
Like a ski. Like the dog is a skier. Goes to the mountains. Puts on.
No.
Okay.
Right. Like the yogurt.
Okay. So the dog is a yogurt.
Yeah, Icelandic for yogurt. Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Wow. How did you get there?
Yeah. If I ever need a creative name.
We really like skier yogurt. And so the timing was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If I need help naming something, I'm going to reach out to Matt and his wife from this point forward and say, please come up with a cool, because that's really a cool name.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, is there a domain name associated with the dog where
not yet.
The dog has a blog?
Well, actually, there's a domain name for the yogurt. So we probably would be in conflict if we try to get one. But
That would be like a .ic or something, though, for Iceland. So you should be okay.
Well, all right. Skier.com is an actual yogurt brand, but
I don't eat a lot of yogurt because I think it's disgusting. There's another category of people who will send hate mail: the lovers of yogurt.
And I should grab my Skier yogurt now because I get it's in key lime flavor, which is
This episode of the Security Table brought to you by yogurt. You need to eat none of this per year to be happy, successful, and wise.
It tastes good. Come on.
That's the tagline that just came up. It tastes good. That would not be the tagline I would associate with it. It would be terrible consistency, but good for you. All right. Well, hey, welcome, folks, to what appeared to be just a random conversation, which is
soft serve.
A random conversation that turns into a discussion about something in the realm of cybersecurity. That's why we call this the Security Table. I'm Chris Romeo, joined by Izar Tarandash, Matt Coles, the Knights of the Security Table, who fight the battles of – I can't even finish the metaphor. I'm sorry.
All just of them. We killed Dast, so I don't know what we fight now.
we fight four-letter acronyms for security products that don't add value to the world. If you're out there, we're coming for you. And a more of a Batman type of thing. So
I wrote
okay, so now we're going into a full Monty Python rendition.
Bring me a fuzzer.
is one of the knights at St. Knee. Was that now in the movie? Was that which movie is it where the guy is like gets his arms cut off and then his legs cut off? And, come closer and I'll bite you.
That's close to the Holy Grail. Same one.
Just was a scratch.
Come closer and I'll bite your ankle. That's how we fight with valor. That's how the Knights of the Security Table, we fight with that same enthusiasm.
But you have no arms.
And result, more than likely. So, all right, but we should actually talk about something in regards to security. And so the topic that we have for this week is fear, uncertainty, and doubt when it comes to consumers and their security consciousness. So we got to this as a result of a post I wrote last week on just reflecting on the role I've seen fear take in the security industry throughout my career of 26 years and seeing how we went from the days of old where it was all about scaring people into doing the right thing or the consumer being scared as a result of, my data is going to be breached or my credit card is going to be stolen, in the days where you had to go to the police station and fill out a police report because your credit card was in a data breach.
You still have to do that, by the way. You're still supposed to do that. Yeah.
No, I don't think, the card companies are so good at, like, they call you and they're like, hey, by the way, your card's been breached. There's a new one in the mail. We got this. It's all good. Like, but that's kind of like the shift of what's happened in perception of those things. But I guess, what is the role of, is there a role for fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD, in the realm of cybersecurity? If we just use the umbrella term, Matt, what are your thoughts?
Is there a role for it? If you mean it, fear drives people to take action, probably. The problem is, does fear, uncertainty, and doubt cause people to A, take the wrong action, or at some point stop taking actions because there's this overload. And I'm fearing, I have some fears that overload happens. I mean, how many data breaches have there been? I mean, let's just drop it out there. Out of the things that are in your home, which ones can get hacked? And which ones can't? And which ones can you do anything about? Short of not doing something, like, you know, not doing something or not buying those things. Hmm. Right? So I think fear is a driving factor to a point, and then there's a cliff or a wall.
Yeah.
I am going to say that we are past that cliff. I think that people have been so, and it's the second time in 2 days that I tried to say that word, and it will never work.
I can't say it.
See?
I can't say it either. So
people are not sensitive to that stuff anymore. To the point that, you know what? Yeah, something else got breached. I got one more email from "You have been pwned," and yeah, sure, whatever. I mean, we spoke about password managers. We spoke about compartmentalization. We spoke about what actually happens when somebody gets breached. And when we bring all that together, I think that people are just like past caring.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're talking about consumers here. We're not talking about security professionals. Right.
Do we even, we as security professionals don't really care about data breaches at the macro level. At least I don't. I don't track them anymore. I don't
know.
I mean, there was a time in my career where we got the morning briefing of anything big that happened the previous day or whatever in regards to giant incidents. But I can say I don't really pay that much attention to it anymore.
I guess, more surprised than fear, I can say. And the surprise is not even that big. Sorry, man.
I was just gonna say, I guess I tend to revert to consumer mode and go look on and see if I'm in the latest, you know, round from "Have I Been Pwned," right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so Marriott got popped, or MGM got popped, or, you know, whoever else. Oh well, I mean, that sucks, right? Another round of credit monitoring, another round of what can I do about this, right?
Does anybody ever sign up for that free credit monitoring, by the way?
So let me give you guys an example. Last Friday, I had a trip for the extended weekend. And of course, as one does, as I leave the house, I check that all the cameras are online and everything, blah, 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 blah. Get to the airport, get into the plane, land. And as one does, you check on your phone to see that you have connectivity, right? To see that everything that you put in place, you can check. And I see that two of my cameras are offline.
Panic in the streets, yep.
And three of them are fine. And yeah. Yes, I have more than five if you're counting. But the point is that right then, instead of like freaking out and saying, okay, my basement just got flooded as soon as I left the house, I went to my email and I looked for any email that I had from the provider. And that's where I see, oh, there's a security thing going on with my provider. Apparently, people have been getting the wrong thumbnails when they open their web access to their cameras. And part of the treatment of the thing was that cameras were taken offline. And no, I was not a victim of that thing. Nobody has thumbnails of me that I know of out there in a compromising situation. But my reaction to the whole thing was, turn around and get another pina colada. Because at the end of the day, what can I do about it as a consumer, right? They're going to go and do their security things. And the only thing that I can worry about is not putting myself in the compromising situations in front of a camera that at the end of the day, I have absolutely no control of.
Well, after the first or second pina colada, who cares, right? I mean,
there's that too.
But lucky they didn't have a camera on that view of you drinking so many pina coladas.
If the cameras that were offline got caught in the rain, they wouldn't work because they were not the offside ones. But yeah, I digress. But my point is that even as a consumer, I would agree that fear would be a factor. if those very smart people in marketing would decide that that's something that they're going to use to sell. But I can't put two home camera systems, one against the other, and say, this one is selling because it's selling itself as more secure, or is it selling itself as we haven't had a breach in the last year? So fear as a motivator, as a buyer, I don't think we're there. I think that there is still a bit of fear of the technology in general.
Well, take it a step back in that example what you were just talking about. Fear as a reason to go buy something versus fear of the thing you're buying, right? So you're talking about, you know, camera A versus camera B because of their data practices and their track record versus why is the consumer buying those cameras in the first place? So I know we're now expanding the view of security out to physical and home security and not necessarily just, network and application security. but so there's different levels of fear. The home security / physical protection thing hasn't yet hit that peak or that wall or that cliff, right, that we're talking about. But from a breach standpoint, from a data security standpoint, from a, I have no control, so do I need to fear it still? We've already run off the edge. We're like the lemmings running off the edge of the cliff, right? Because breaches happen all the time. Products get hacked all the time.
And we've chosen to consume those products, right? Right. Like,
because we have the option.
Yeah. Who needs a smart toothbrush?
What even does a smart toothbrush do?
Apparently fixes your dumb teeth.
Apparently it gets hacked. apparently it gets hacked in a botnet, right?
Well, that's what got us into, that's what got me into this whole conversation and made me reflect on fear as a motivator in cybersecurity again. Because yes, there was this report and it started to make its way through the media that smart toothbrushes were being assembled into botnets and we're performing distributed denial of service. And then it turned out it was bunk. It was just a complete fabrication. I don't know if ChatGPT may have hallucinated in an article and
earlier this week when ChatGPT went completely off the rails.
I thought it was finally the dentists of the world taking over.
that is a possible scenario, but it just that's really what brought it back to the forefront for me is this. There was this kind of attempt to generate fear by saying that the smart toothbrushes were going to assemble into botnets and cause a distributed denial of service.
Every time that you say smart toothbrush assemble, I got this Voltron image in my head of smart toothbrushes coming together into this like sort of master toothbrush.
I'm going to scrub you, human.
and then all of a sudden it's going to make you floss. You're going to floss.
I told you to do it every day. Right. Not submit.
So listen, the hygienist told you, the dentist told you, and now I'm here to make you pay. And then the floss pops out and the smart toothbrush.
Or you suddenly get 18 cases of fluoride toothpaste that you didn't know that you need.
Now that's gargle.
That's a different type of attack.
No, but wait. So, okay, so that one turned out to be wrong. Turned out to be an hallucination by either a LLM or a writer. But let's think for a second here. Is there an ulterior motive that somebody would put that online as a rumor or as a fact, actually? Would that lead to something like... Would it make people consider buying smart toothbrushes or not? Would it make one brand of smart toothbrushes be more valued than the other because there was no breach on that one?
Well, think about who's buying those things in the first place. I mean, a smart toothbrush cost. So a regular toothbrush costs what? $2, $3?
Well, they give you one at the dentist if you go.
Yeah, right. And if you go to a local grocery store, you can pick up a two pack for a couple of bucks. So the people who are looking for smart toothbrushes are either super health conscious
or not very smart.
They are super health conscious. They are super health conscious and have a lot of disposable income. right? And so the question of, so first off, do they even know that they may or may not have gotten hacked, right? Do they have the consciousness, the awareness that that's a thing? Number one.
Oh my God, I'm about to be so offensive.
All right.
Your sociopathic tendencies are about to show up. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know what? Let's leave that one to the last episode. Yeah. No.
I mean, outside of the why would anybody need a smart toothbrush, I think that's a discussion for a different podcast by maybe people that are medically trained or something. Maybe there's a good reason. Like, I don't feel like we're qualified to answer that question. I mean, my initial answer is I don't see why anybody would need this, but if we circle back around towards more of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt angle of it, I like where you were going with that, Izar. And could it be a competitive advantage for one company over another? Could we weaponize security?
Or lack thereof,
yes.
Or privacy, by the way. It doesn't have to
privacy
be
security. Or security, but could we weaponize it based on a lack of rigor that a competitor applies to a given type of product? If you have a company that has the same product, are we facing a future where security is weaponized by companies against each other?
Are there FTC rules against that? I mean, you're making outlandish claims, right?
This is a thought experiment more than anything.
No. I'm not saying you. I'm saying the companies that would be making these comparisons might be making some fantastic claims, right?
Yeah. Oh, like in this case,
distributed denial of service. We can get hacked, and so you should buy our product. But that doesn't mean we're not susceptible to that. Yeah.
If we go back to Sony, MGM, or any of the big companies, big breaches, and look at their stock price. I myself have been using that as FUD for a long time to tell people, hey, if you get breached, you're going to have an impact on your... But I think that somebody did a study and turned out that nobody cares. So,
yeah, not anymore.
It dips for a bit, but it goes right back. Right?
I mean, it used to be, like, remember the Target breach that we all lived through? There was a big consumer. I remember people that I know that had no knowledge of cybersecurity saying, I'm not going to shop there, or I'm bringing cash with me.
Yeah.
So there was definitely a time period where that level of incident resulted in lower reputational damage and a loss of customers and sales. Yeah, I think
TJX,
those days are
the
gone.
Same way. Yeah. TJX had the same thing, I think, vintage, though, right?
It was in the same year or two. I don't think that happens anymore. I think we're so far away from that because people are just, this is the numbness. I heard somebody describe this as data breach numbness.
So it goes back to not being sensitive to it anymore, but not because people don't care about their data being out there. It's just that right now they are just assuming that at some point the people who hold their data are going to get bombed. It became a fact of life.
Yeah,
pretty much. And by the way, it's probably that stock, you know, if they're publicly traded, that's sort of baked in. You have SEC filings now that talk about this sort of stuff. And I wonder if we need something like GDPR, right, which has pretty sizable financial impact, you know, for an infraction, right?
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of potential impact. That would have serious impact on a bottom line.
But I don't want to go here, but I'm going to go here just for a second. And then we might have to put this on the shelf for a future debate discussion after more research. But I'm going to say something that may not be that popular, but I don't think GDPR actually did very much at the end of the day. Yes, they sued Facebook. They went after Google in the early days. But did it really move the needle? Companies, is individual privacy better as a result on this globe because of what happened with GDPR?
I think the answer is, and I'm not the expert. I'm still learning about these sort of things, but I think the answer is yes, but not because of the financial impact. Hmm. It's more of it's now in people's minds.
Consumers have people that are buying and using products. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have not just GDPR. Now you have, the patchwork that is the United States, and you have other countries that are jumping on board. And so it's becoming more in the common common view that this is important, and not necessarily that the hundreds of millions of dollars of Facebook and Apple and Google and whoever get hit by matter as much.
So
just Chris, a completely naive view there.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a bit even more than you just did. Okay. And I'm just going to say, if people are at that point in their lives where they are not sensitive to this anymore, I think that, and I'm looking at the mirror when I say that, I think that means that we suck. We as security practitioners, we suck. Yeah,
let's qualify that.
No, seriously.
Tell us more. Like, what do you mean? What are we?
If people are at a point where they actually expect things to be breached, then it's just because we haven't been done our work well enough, and breaches are so commonplace that not being breached. We discussed if being breached is a disadvantage. And that leads me to not being breached being an advantage, and it's not anymore. Right. So
it's not a differentiator because it's not a differentiator anymore. Well, it's expected to be a matter of time. It's not really it's sort of a foregone conclusion that it will happen.
Yeah, I guess as a society we've accepted this as normal. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing normal to this.
The things that we use are not infallible.
And there's nothing normal to this stuff. It shouldn't be normal.
Oh, we brought out the puppets already. Oh, darn.
But it is. It is. That's the reality that we live in. And I guess, have we failed as security professionals? Then that's kind of where you're going. Izar, as you're saying, did we fail as an industry? Like, we can't really, we're not going to call ourselves out specifically as like,
it's all our fault. It's all the ops people. It's not us. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Thank God it's Friday. Now I can have a whole weekend for an existential crisis.
Where's the pina coladas now, there, buddy?
Yeah. Do you like pina coladas?
I just and got caught in the rain.
And breaches in the rain.
And breaches in the rain. Well, we have to do something with those lyrics that we have.
Our new hit single, Breaches in the Rain. So, all right. Well, this, now that we've left Izar with an existential crisis for the weekend, I just thought of another angle on this that I want to get your take, both of your takes on this, because I think this is still happening. What I'm about to describe is still happening, and it gets called out a lot more now. So you may know where I'm going with this, but there are still salespeople that use fear, uncertainty, and doubt and the misfortune of competitors as a lead generation technique or as a way to reach out to people. And so if a company has a breach that's like, say, a cloud, let's just say, I don't even know if they've had breaches. I'm just going to say a cloud storage provider has some type of security incident in the news. Account executives from their nearest competitor will start emailing people, emailing prospects and say, well, hey, you probably saw what happened with company A. Company B, we take security seriously. And we invest in it. And I'm not making this up. Like, it used to happen all the time. Like, I can remember a day 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where this was the normal sales approach that would happen. It was the ambulance chasing of the world. I don't think it happens as much now, but it still happens. Now, we're better as an industry when people will call people out and start publishing their these type of approaches. But I mean, what have you guys still seen this? Have you seen this happening in the marketplace?
I've seen a bit of what can we learn from XXX. And then the unsaid part is that we are better. But I have seen some hooks coming in as postmortems, or let's see what went wrong there that would never happen with us.
So it's like more of a soft sell now. It's not as confrontational, but it's still the same. They're going for the same outcome.
I think that they took the Schadenfreude out of it, and that they're not reveling so much into the failure of others. And it's taking a bit more of an educational tone of what can we learn from that, which, by the way, I'm all for. I just don't think that would make me buy something.
Now, are you talking about you know, corporate sales and sort of as a practitioner, does this translate? Are you seeing this translate to out in the real world? Like, I mean, most people don't buy direct from security vendors, right? But they may buy, they may get pushed. I mean, NordVPN and others, you know, push VPN software all the time, but they're using the general state of security as a selling factor. And the consumers, you know, they get some fear and uncertainty and doubt. Are you sitting at your local coffee shop and are you going to get popped because you're in your, you know, at
which the top of your Wi-Fi? Which is the biggest bunch of bunk these right now. I wanted to unpack that, but I went to the enterprise though, to answer your question. I kind of set this stage up. I, without telling anybody, I switched our focus from the consumer side of this to the enterprise. Cause obviously with consumers, you don't have account executives that are reaching out to consumers and generating, using fear, uncertainty and doubt as a sales tactic. So we've kind of,
actually, you do.
But
it's what Matt just mentioned.
Yeah.
But I think that the point there is that we got to a point again because of the general state where the public's head is regarding security, that people are at the point where they say, I need to have a toothbrush, might as well be a smart one. Meaning, I need to have this minimal amount of cyber hygiene, might as well get the latest VPN that says that it's, I don't know, they have points of presence in 300 countries. So I can move myself over there. Well, just off the top of my head. But I think the math is right, that there is still some thought going around in terms of what do you need as a minimum practice of cyber hygiene. And while I think that everybody should be at least minimally educated in that, it's a survival trait today, I am not sure, again, that people have the enough understanding of the problem to say this one is better than this one, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, what, you know, just on that, I guess just to take that a little bit further, and here's the general question for you. Do you think you need to buy something in order to be secure?
To be or to feel?
To be.
Consumer or enterprise?
Consumer.
Who are we talking about?
Consumer. Right. And is more better.
Is your definition of you Izar or I or a general
put your parents, put your kids, put your whatever hat on.
Okay.
And think about them. Do you have to buy something or do you have to pay more for something for it to be better?
Or secure
when it comes to security. Yeah. So things like a VPN, right? You can pay $2 a month or you can pay $20 a month.
I mean, I think that's the model that exists in the marketplace. Like, let me give you an example. So I use these Eero routers it's now an Amazon company.
And that's a mesh router system.
The simplicity of it is just brilliant. Like I used to be a network person and I used to love wiring my house and making connections. Now I just want the stupid thing to work. I just want to plug it in, just make it work, stop not working. And so, but with Eero, I have to pay an additional fee for their advanced security. Let me put that in air quotes. And that gets me like threat intelligence blocking of things. It gets me ad blocking. It gets me some things. It's just a software feature. But I recommend other people do it too, because like, it's very seldom do ads get served up on my network here to any devices you're using, because Eero they just block it. But it's so I think, but I don't know that. I mean, maybe normal people don't take that step and pay that extra money because they don't see the value proposition. I know for me, I looked at the list of features. I'm like, done. Of course, I want that level of, you know, malware. Bots, they're doing all the threat intelligence stuff behind the scenes, and then the device just knows don't accept anything from this IP, these IP addresses or whatever, you know. But I don't know, maybe normal, I call them normal people, security superpowers. maybe they don't. Maybe they look at that and they're like, I don't want to pay the extra money. I just want the thing to connect me to the internet.
Yeah, I mean, people are always annoyed at ads, but is it dangerous do we have uncertainty or doubt about dangerousness that would drive fear, right? Fear is a response to those other two things. And so you have fear, which is why you pay. But others maybe not don't have that level of understanding yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, where would they get it, right? Like,
well, they get it from commercials saying, "Hey, you know, home Wi-Fi is under threat. Go buy this product."
I don't want to ever get political on this podcast, but the media, like, we're in an age where it's challenging to know who you can trust that's speaking to you, because everybody has an agenda, everybody has an opinion, and it's not the days of old where the news broadcaster on TV was a trusted source of and everybody just trusted whatever they said. Now, they could have been lying through their teeth to us. Who knows, right? But there was a trust that existed with that. We don't have that concept is gone, at least in how I perceive the world. And so there is no source of truth that can speak to the masses about security. And let people know what the real threat is. Like, we're circling back around to attack toothbrushes, right? That's what happens is we just people throw out all this crap. You know, somebody gets up with an idea and then people have become so numbed because it's been hyped up for so long that it's the Chicken Little problem, right? How many times do I have to hear the sky is falling where I'm just like, you're full of crap. The sky's not falling. It may actually fall and land on top of me, but I've heard it so many times that I'm numb to the concept that the sky is falling.
Well, and we see, I mean, as security people, right? We know how to get cut through that because there's people we trust who talk about this sort of stuff.
Yep.
Right. I mean, we've talked about Bob Lord and CISA in the past, and you know Bob's had some pretty high profile posts about you're not at danger at your local cafe, internet cafe or coffee shop, right? It's fun, and well, maybe not, but but we have the tools to help cut through the FUD. The consumer doesn't, right? They see that, oh my god, they see my smart toothbrush is at risk.
Yeah. Yeah. And
what do I do?
I mean, Daniel Meisler is the one who posted the initial response to the toothbrush thing saying like, I don't think this is right. And that's somebody that I've read a lot of his stuff. I followed him for a long time. I'm like, oh, now I'm all of a sudden looking at things closely going like, if Daniel Meisler said he did analysis and this is what he figured out, this isn't true. But yeah, to your point, like Joe consumer, Jane consumer doesn't have the insight that we're able to glean. And so that's why they're numb to these things. Cause there's nothing else they can do. They can't hear the sky is falling anymore.
And to your early point, the sources that they're getting information from are not making those connections either. They're not following up. And prominent security researchers said this is bunk. That story we told you yesterday. Yeah. Probably ignore it.
Yeah,
you know that it almost starts sounding like a way to DOS people. Like we know that there's a lot that we see on the media and whatnot that tries to divert attention. But if you really want to keep people busy, keep people occupied somewhere, not only like 15 minutes of them paying attention to something, but causing them to actually ask those questions that Chris asked in the beginning. What in your house could be, or Matt, I don't remember. What could be hacked in your house and actually serve as something? You know what? It would give me pause. It would make me for 1 hour go around and say, okay, do I have the latest firmware and everything? And is my router closed and this and that and the other one? So, yeah, it's a great idea to get people's attention away from things.
Yeah, and as we're coming to the end of our time, it just makes me realize we don't have any single trusted source that has legitimized themselves to the masses about cybersecurity.
Kerbs.
Who?
Oh, Krebs. Krebs.
Krebs.
I mean,
yeah, but Krebs is dense reading. Nobody's going to take the time to read that.
Yeah, he's not mass market. He's not somebody who.
No, he's not. No.
Hack 5 maybe, right, as a YouTube video, but you have to be on YouTube. You have to know what you're looking for. And they're also
I'm just
not
thinking about. You know, it seems like in other parts of society, there are people who stand up and kind of hold that responsibility for us for trying to educate in a certain area. And cybersecurity is just one of those things that no, but there is no trusted source. If we went to a mall, there'd be nobody there. If we went to a shopping center that had various a Target and a Home Depot and whatnot in it, and we asked 10 people just randomly, just walking out of their cars, presuming they would talk to us, some of them would just run away, but presuming we could get 10 people to answer the question, who is a trusted cybersecurity source for you? I think we would get nobody. I don't think they would answer. I think they would say,
you know, there is we need the cyber or application security equivalent to Neil deGrasse Tyson. Your personal astrophysicist. Well, we need your personal cyber person. Like,
and it's funny that nobody's grabbed that.
We're missing something. No, there is. We're missing someone.
Who?
I don't know. I got something. It's not Schneier. I got something in the back of my head.
The closest one is those guys, like Leo, the guy that does the pod. He's done the podcast for like 10, 20 years at this point. Leo Laporte, maybe, or something like that. I think he had a radio show at one point. That would be the closest to a. But see, you guys don't even know who I'm talking about. So
no.
It's not. He never reached a mass. I think he reached a technical audience legitimization, if that's a word. But never a mass market type of thing where everybody was willing to say, like, this person knows consumer security. And
we need a Neil deGrasse, or we need a Bill Nye equivalent, right?
I was thinking Bill Nye. Yeah, but wait, we should ask deGrasse in here so that he can explain to us how we get that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's
okay,
available.
Let's get on it.
He did Joe Rogan, so I mean, if he'll do Rogan, he'll probably do our show. I mean, we're basically.
If you're out there and you're listening to us and you have a connection to Neil deGrasse, let us know. We want him here.
Or if you know him, just text him. Tell him to show up.
Yeah, that too.
Anytime, we'll make it available.
I mean, there is one person. Maybe there's two. Actually, there are two. But yeah. Again, they're not mass market. I guess Neil Stephenson, who talks a lot about sci-fi, and then you have Corey.
Oh, he's up here.
Cory Doctorow.
Both of them up here, up here.
Yeah, they're not mass market though, to you, like what you said. They're known quantities, they're smart people, but they don't. I'm thinking about like who should be on the Today Show talking about public Wi-Fi security. Like there is no person, there's nobody that's filled that gap. That's bridging the gap between large and small technology companies that are putting out products and the consumer. So we've got an opportunity for anybody listening out there who wants to become we'll help you with the branding. We'll come up with it. We'll make a podcast for you, website, Twitter.
But we are in this field where as soon as somebody raises their head to take that place, they're going to get bombarded from all sides with, oh, but you didn't mention this. Oh, but you forgot this edge case. Oh, but that doesn't work in this. Nobody's going to have the energy to deal with that.
Oh, it'll take a special person that would be able to do this, that would just be able to ignore all of the nonsense. Yeah.
We need Neil deGrasse Tyson to help us because he's done it for astrophysicists. How bad can it be for cybersecurity? Yeah.
How could you explain? How could you make it so that you
get pelted by astrophysicists all over the world saying, I know better than you? I know that he does, but people who have no clue because that's a really fun read. But.
All right. Well,
we need Cybersecurity Mythbusters edition or something. You know,
that could be an idea too. But
let's,
I think we're.
Let's go there.
We've done some of it before on the show already. We've busted some myths and whatnot. But I think we're out of time for today. It's another one of those episodes where I feel like we maybe just made the problem bigger without solving anything.
I'm doing existential crisis.
Yeah. So you'll be.
I'll start in 10, 9, 8.
No, you could schedule it for, you know. Well, you know what? You don't really want to ruin your weekend, so you might want to start it now, and maybe it'll end midday through Sunday. But you know, it's all good. But this is good. This is the type of stuff that's fun to explore these various avenues and see where we land. And so, Matt Coles for Cybersecurity Czar. And he just waved to accept it. So,
yeah, because you can't have czar for czar. It's too confusing.
Oh. That's true. If we could use those two words together, your name
I'm
and Czar.
I'm your personal cyber consultant.
Oh, I like that. That's good branding. All right.
Wait, no. Now it just reminded me. Who was it that was cyber consultant for the stars? It's somebody that we know.
Is?
Yeah, somebody that
I know. Michael Lodenthal that spoke. He did a lot of work with famous people, politicians and stuff about personal security. But once again, it wasn't public. It was more from a one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah. It was but somebody working. Had that moniker. Now this is going to drive me nuts.
Maybe it was you this whole time.
No, not me. No.
All right. Well, hey, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of The Security Table. We'll be back next week with more Madcap